This is London.
Here is the news.
You're tuned to the General Overseas Service of the BBC. This is the British Broadcasting Corporation.
That's called Lily Bolero. That's the BBC stick tune from the World Service over many years. And this is Rob from the BBC.
Hello, everyone. This is Ola Mang for Polish Radio Wisła in Seattle. Today, I'd like to share with you a conversation with Rob Bailey. Rob had worked for over 30 years for British Broadcasting Corporation, which we all know as BBC. Rob recently retired from BBC and is involved in several radio programs. So today, we would like to talk about both of those things he does, the TV shows he did and the radio. Welcome, Rob.
Hi, I'm very pleased to be here. I'm very honored. Thank you for asking me.
Thank you so much for coming to Radio Wisła.
Okay, well, I've worked for BBC for, as you say, over 30 years, which is strange to work for one person for 30 years, but the BBC has been a wonderful career, very varied over the years. We'll talk a bit more about radio later. I started in radio as an engineer, but once you start in the BBC in anything, you could be a secretary or you could be emptying all the bins in the offices, but once you have a job there, you can move around a little bit. And I was very lucky in the 1980s, I started to work in BBC television, and it's quite interesting. The first program I worked on was called Tomorrow's World. Tomorrow's World is a program about new science ideas. And jumping right to the last thing I did before I retired very recently, I retired when I worked on the Antiques Roadshow. So I went from Tomorrow's World to Yesterday's World in 30 years.
But you started as a kind of a geeky engineer. You finished electrical engineering at Cambridge. That's Cambridge, England, not Cambridge, Massachusetts, right?
Okay. I did actually in Manchester. I was born in Cambridge. I wish I'd gone to Cambridge. Cambridge is one of the best universities. I went to Manchester, which was pretty good. Okay. And I started, as you say, as an electronics engineer. But while I was doing electronics at Manchester, the BBC had one of these very small local radio stations, BBC Radio Manchester, and they had a student radio program. So for half an hour every week with some friends, I made this student radio program, which is called Student Scene, very exciting title. But what happened there was I learned how to make small programs. We'd interview people and we'd play records and we'd tell people what's going on in Manchester that week. But anyway, I learned how to make radio without being paid. This was just a volunteer thing. And then the BBC had a job called studio manager, and I managed to get one of these studio manager jobs largely because I'd got this experience at Radio Manchester. And as a studio manager, I was twiddling the knobs. So I was behind the scenes, making the sound, correcting all the sound and adjusting the sound levels. And one of my favorite interests is pop music and rock music. And I got to work on some of the programs where they had live bands in the studios. Quite a famous disc jockey is called John Peel, and he had these great bands. And, you know, in the early 1980s, I was doing the sound mixing on these rock bands. So it was the beginning of my BBC career, which turned out to be very varied.
And then you decided that's what you're going to do for a living, not to be an engineer, but to start as a recording studio engineer, manager, right?
That's right.
And you worked for Radio 1?
Yeah, Radio 1, 2, and in fact, all of them. I did some programs on Radio 1, just as an engineer. This is behind the scenes, technical. And Radio 4, which is the speech program, the news. I used to go in, do sometimes the night shifts and through the night. And the World Service that you heard at the beginning, I used to sometimes do night shifts and, again, doing all the sound adjustment and getting all the sounds right for the World Service. So it was everything from news to pop music. So it's very interesting.
And now kind of a jumping over all of that, from being a studio engineer, you became a film producer for BBC. Can you tell us about the films you made and how did you get there?
Yes, I started making programs. I've always been interested in documentaries. And so the films I ended up making were what you might call popular factual programs. So like Tomorrow's World, which was science programs. And then I went to the, that was in London. And then I moved to the west of England, to Bristol. And that's where I live now. And BBC Bristol made some great programmes. They made I worked for a long time on a programme called 999. Now, 999 is the number you dial for an emergency in England. So you have 911 in America, but in the UK, if you you're in trouble, you dial 999, and that's the name of the programme. And that was all about rescuing people. So it could be a house on fire. It could be somebody falling off a boat and drowning. But we would make these programs how people were rescued.
How did you get those stories?
Oh, well, the newspapers. But people would write in as well. What would happen is somebody would, maybe they got stranded and a helicopter has to rescue them from a cliff or this type of story. And the people who were rescued were so grateful to the rescue services, the RAF usually, if it's helicopters, that they would write to us, and making the film was a very good way for them to say thank you to the rescue services. And they were quite emotional films. We interviewed people, and very often the people would have died. You know, they got very close to death, and, you know, we'd interview people, they'd be in tears telling us their stories. The thing everybody knew on 999 was that nobody actually died, because you know that, well,
that's right,
because you're interviewing them now, so they must still be there. But clearly they had a very bad experience, and they nearly died. And we reconstruct with actors. So we would have an actor who looked like the person. So we'd interview the real person, then we'd have an actor play them, and we'd reconstruct how they were out for a walk and they fell off the cliff or whatever happened to them. So they were quite exciting films to make, and also very emotional.
Yes.
So that program, which I was on for 5 years, it used lots of different techniques to sort of make it emotional and exciting.
And I understand from rescue programs you moved kind of away from England. You traveled a lot, and last time you were in Seattle, you were actually here to make movie, right?
I did come to Seattle, to the University of Washington. And that was a program about the science of shopping, just something very different again. It's the psychology of what makes people buy different products and how you design your stalls or your shop windows. And the University of Seattle at the time was doing research into the psychology of shopping. So I came and made a film about that. I've also traveled for a program.
Did that make you a smaller shopper?
A smaller shopper.
Do you shop less after that?
Probably shop more after that, but I know how they work now. When I walk into a shopping mall, so for example, you walk into a supermarket and they put all the fresh food right by the door, and they have a bakery making the smells of fresh bread.
Oh, yeah.
It draws people into the shop. This is the psychology. So at least now I understand that I'm being encouraged to buy more.
Mm-hmm.
Before I was just.
And you still do it?
I still do it, yes.
Kind of to close on filmmaking, can you come up with the most interesting or most surprising film you ever made for you?
Most interesting or surprising? Let's have a think. Probably was one of the rescue programs, and I had to go to the Falkland Islands. This is the wonderful thing about the career, that, you know, you get sent to places you wouldn't expect.
To go.
And there was a film I made where I had to go to the Falkland Islands, and there's only one plane a week, so I was there for a whole week with the penguins and everything. And we had to set a boat on fire, a really big boat. And so it's quite a big production number. I've never made a feature film in my life. That's one thing. I've retired without doing a big feature film, but it was the nearest thing to it. So we had a huge boat on fire, and we had about 8 helicopters that the RAF let us use, and we had underwater cameramen. It was just a big production, about 6 or 7 cameras all running, and that made quite a big production. And that's what I'm very honored to have done, because it was quite difficult to make, quite stressful. But huge respect for the rescue services who helped, and to the people who were rescued. So that was 999 in the Falkland Islands. So that's the biggest production I probably managed to do.
I'm sure that they differ in time, all those movies, but is there an average time frame you like to work for your films?
I think I do have quite a short attention span, and TV can take a long time to make. You can spend hours and hours fine-tuning, and what I quite like about a lot of television is you can now, with new equipment and editing, people can edit, some people at home now, they can edit their own material. You can actually make TV much more spontaneously. And sometimes I think people perhaps can think too much. You know, they spend too long fine-tuning, and you're only thinking over and over again. And it's, in some ways, that's why I've come back to radio, because radio is something, as you can do now here with one microphone, a lady like yourself can make a whole radio program, and I think it's great.
All right, maybe we should move to the radio. I think it was your true love. It was actually radio, not television.
Yeah.
And you ran a mobile disco at the university, right? And you put on bands when you were still a student?
Yeah, while I was doing that radio program on Radio Manchester, I probably wasn't working hard enough on my studies, to be honest, because I was also working. We had live bands at Manchester University, like Pink Floyd and Led Zeppelin, these quite big names in the 1970s when I was at university. And I was part of the, what they call the social committee, so the people that were booking these bands. And then twice a week we'd have these discotheques, which would be, one would be a pop music disco, just pop music dancing. And the big thing in the 1970s was called heavy metal music. And the metal music. And we'd have Deep Purple and Black Sabbath and other sort of guitar bands. And I would do the heavy metal disco. So a lot of people with long hair. And
did you have long hair?
I'm afraid so. I've got no hair now, but I had hair down to my shoulders. Somebody told me once I had nice hair for a girl.
Nice for a girl.
Yeah.
So let's jump to today. Now that you retired from TV, you're back to radio, and you are involved in a community radio in Bristol, where you live, Summer Valley FM.
Yes, it's a community radio station, and it's very nice because it's very intimate. You can make a program. Many thousands of listeners, but people email you in, and you know that they're local people, and it's voluntary. You know, the people doing it for love, and that,
like we,
yeah, like we're doing it for love, like you do your, you know, you're a guide in the Japanese garden. You do it because you love it,
and because we do this radio, we are volunteers too.
That's right, and the only motivation is because you enjoy doing it. And it's one reason I've worked it out now since I've left BBC, why people always say BBC programs are very good. And that's because the people making them are making them for the viewers and the listeners. They're not making it for the money or for the advertisers.
It's for the price.
Yeah, obviously it's a job and you get your salary paid, but you could earn more money away from the BBC, but most people want to make it because they're passionate about the programs. Mm. And now I've retired, so I'm not paid for any broadcasting, but I do enjoy making community radio and helping other people learn about the equipment and how to use microphones and so on.
And now that you're away, how is the radio surviving? Should we bring Georgia?
Yeah, Georgia. Well, Georgia's a lovely lady. She's a lot younger than me. She's just over 20 years old, and you can guess I'm over 60. I've retired now. But Georgia's one of the new people coming through. I think she's very talented. And
can we
back
hear
home,
how she did?
Well, let's try it, shall we? We'll see if we can tune into Georgia. This is my program. It's on Summer Valley FM, and the program's called Eclectic Selection. And just this week, while I'm over here with Alexandra, this is how Georgia is sounding on the Eclectic Selection, doing it for me.
Eclectic Selection. It is my first week, so I'm a little bit nervous. Hopefully, I will be able to do the show justice. We're going to start off with a little bit of Motown. It is my mum's birthday, and she did request it, so I thought I'd play it first and get it out of the way. So here we go. This is My Girl, Temptations.
She's too good, isn't she? See,
you don't have a job, Rob, when you get back.
She doesn't need me to go back.
She will have her own program soon.
I'll play this. This is one of our funny jingles. We like to have a laugh and we don't take ourselves too seriously. This is the second hour of what Georgia did. This is only today. I'm hearing this for the first time myself, but this is how Georgia started the second half of the program today.
She did it when we slept, right?
Yeah, it was 2 o'clock in the morning.
Right, in Seattle.
In Seattle, but this was done live. We do this program every week live. The Eclectic Selection over in Summer Valley FM near Bristol.
You're with Rob Bailey picking the tunes on Summer Valley 97.5 FM.
Welcome back. I hope you got up and stretched your legs if you were sat down. You are, of course, listening to the Eclectic Selection. It's not with Rob, it is with me, Georgia. Rob is away, if you didn't already know. So I hope you like what I'm doing. It's 2 minutes past 11. We've got lots more to come. I'm going to play something which is an instrumental. I've got a lot of instrumental stuff today. Next time I'm on, I'll make sure I've got lots of stuff with lyrics. So this is called Caliban's Dream. And it's, I think it was played a lot during the 2012 Olympics in London. So maybe if you were in London, you're watching the Olympics, or just the adverts and all the stuff that was going on. This, I think this was absolutely played, and it's quite a nice, it's a good uplifting song. So I'm going to play it next, and I hope you enjoy it.
She's got a lovely voice, hasn't she?
Yes, this was wonderful, Georgia, standing in for Rob on Summer Valley Radio. You have 2 hours every Thursday, right?
Yes, I do 2 hours live every Thursday, and then on a Friday another 2 hours, which I record. This is a show, eclectic selection. I might play something current, something new. Might play some jazz. I might play Jimi Hendrix. I might play Wagner. So it's a program where any type of music goes. And then my other show is a pop show about the 60s and 70s music, which is a tribute to the radio stations. We had round the coast of England in the 1960s, we had Radio Caroline and some what they call pirate radio stations. And they had a big effect on the BBC. The BBC had to change how it played music, and that's the period I grew up in. So my other show is a tribute to offshore music radio.
How are we doing on time?
On here? 16 minutes we've been rabbiting on here.
Oh, yeah.
Doesn't time fly?
Yes, time flies. So maybe, thank you, Rob, so much. I'd like to end with actually something else Rob does when he's not doing films or radio. He likes to do hot air balloon. This is a man who likes risks, obviously. And as we were talking earlier, he was telling me a lot of very funny stories about his flying in balloons. But I kept thinking that all of his stories end well, and there's nothing dramatic like Dorothy coming back home to Kansas. So I asked him if he ever was in any danger, and can I ask you to retell the story?
I'll give you the brief version. Yes, ballooning is a wonderful sport, and it's very, very uplifting, very positive, and it makes people smile. But of course, it's one of those sports which you have to be respectful of the dangers. Every time you land in a balloon, it's what you call a controlled crash, really. And if you can walk away from it, then it's a successful balloon flight. But there was one occasion I was flying, this is about 15 years ago now, but we like to fly in all sorts of environments. And we were in the mountains, in the Alps, and a lot of balloons took off, and it was very pleasant and calm. But then the winds got faster and faster and faster. We didn't realize what the weather was changing. And we all had trouble when we landed. And when I landed, the balloon came down very fast with a big bang. Everyone didn't really hurt themselves or didn't, but as we hit a snowdrift, but one of my fuel connections disconnected, and our fuel's called propane. Propane's a gas, and when the gas escapes, the first thing you must have is no naked lights, and we're trained to turn out our lights. So as we landed, I turned out my pilot lights, but what did happen when the fuel connector broke, all this cold gas came all over my legs. So the bottom half of my body, my waist and my legs, was sprayed with this very cold propane. And I can tell the story now with a smile because everything worked out fine. I even had a baby son afterwards because I got damaged in all sorts of places, which I want to talk about. But everything works fine. I had a baby boy and I had a skin graft, which is I had very bad burns, cold burns on my leg. I even actually ran to a local hotel. And I dived into the swimming pool without even asking, because when you have a burn, the thing you have to do is to immerse it in cold water. And you must stay there for quite a few minutes to stop the burn getting worse. So I dived into the swimming pool. The people must have wondered who this man is who's just run in from the street and dived in the swimming pool. But we called for help. And I was sent back to hospital, and I came back to Bristol, where they gave me a beautiful skin graft. And my left leg looks like a pizza now, because the skin is all rough, but everything's fine. So it's a story that could have been on that 999 program. It was near death. If I'd had the pilot lights on, there would have been a big explosion and fire. There was no fire. I ended up with a bad burn, which is now repaired. So it's another happy ending, I'm afraid.
It is. I particularly like the part when you ran to the hotel to ask the receptionist to call for ambulance, and then you realize that you need to keep running to get to the pool. So this is Swiss Alps, right?
Yeah.
And there's this Brit running. She's probably, they're all crazy, running and jumping to the pool without saying a word. From the pool, you ask her to call ambulance?
Well, she asked, I could smell, as I came into reception, I could smell the chlorine, the smell in the pool. And I said, I'm just going for a swim. I won't be long. And I ran past the reception. She thought, mad Englishman.
So from the pub, would you mind calling the ambulance? Is that how it happened?
Yeah, I was shouting, call an ambulance. I burnt myself. And I think her English was okay. She understood.
And there was a song written about it, so we'll play it for the end. Thank you, Rob, so very much. Rob Bailey, who is right now at Summer Valley Radio FM.
Well, thank you, Alexandra. It's been great. It's been a pleasure to be on here. This song I'll play now, it's called Propane, and it's actually based on a song. A blues musician called Eric Clapton did a song called Cocaine, about the drug cocaine. So listen to the new words here for cocaine. And it's about propane and how the gas propane can burn you if you get it wrong. So this is cocaine converted into propane.
When you fly in the Alps and your tank blows out, propane. Well, you better get down on the ground, propane. You can't fly without propane.